Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I am David Haw, joined until 11 o'clock with Bruce Levine. We are here to talk Cubs. We are here to talk White Sox. We are here to talk about another very interesting week in spring training out in Arizona. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, David. Yeah, looking forward to it. Boy, it's been, you know, with all the sunshine that we've been fortunate enough to have in the Chicago area, it's just starting to feel like baseball season, isn't it? The snow is mostly gone. We have very moderate weather for March right now. So I'm starting to feel like it's baseball season. I hope everybody else is as well. This is Inside the Clubhouse. As David said, we're here from you. For you, rather, every Saturday from 9 to 11. And you can reach us at 312-644-6767. That's our text and phone line, as David and I will converse with you, read all the texts that are worthy to be on the air. And David, where would you like to start? What side of the valley in Arizona would you like to start on?
Well, I think we start, Bruce, we obviously want to get to everything that happened this week. We have some great guests coming up. Willie Harris at 9:10, the Cubs third base coach. Evan Marshall, the fine White Sox reliever, at 9:40. A lot of your baseball conversations as well. But let's start with the news of the day. I think a lot of Cubs fans, when they were seeing yesterday's Javi Baez at bat with the bases loaded in the third inning, and he just got hit on the right forearm and went straight to the dugout. You saw that maybe immediately there was some concern about what that injury would imply. Everybody sort of held their breath a little bit, but we know now that he was hitting the forearm, and we have a little bit of more of an injury update and some information that should make Cubs fans feel a little bit better.
Yeah, just a contusion, which isn't ideal, but it's certainly okay. It certainly beats the heck out of a broken forearm or a broken wrist. So the concern was the way he dropped the bat immediately. Yeah. The inning ended. He went to the dugout. He came out of the game. But all of his reactions seemed to be, I'm not happy with this. But he wasn't holding it for an extended period of time. They weren't rushing him off into the complex to get him x-rayed right away. So hopefully, and again, you know, the next day is key, and they'll probably take some more some pictures just to make sure. But the first reports were there was no break and there is just a contusion, but that has to be followed up on today.
It's not the way that you want Javi Baez to be flipping his bat during an at bat, right, Bruce? You'd rather see him.
that's not it. And again, it reminds you, David. It reminds you of how tenuous it is out there for a lot of players as far as injury goes. You know, you get your 40-man roster, you get to spring training, you start your games, and then you go, oh, yeah, by the way, injuries take place in spring training. Injuries take place all year. That's why you have a 40-man roster. But how deep are those rosters? Can any team like the Cubs or White Sox afford to lose their starting shortstop and be able to be contenders? Those are great questions, and they go flowing through your mind when you see situations like Baez getting hit yesterday.
Absolutely. That is what you think of first, and it's good news to hear if it's not as bad as maybe you initially feared. Let's wait and see and follow that. Bruce, let's stick with the Cubs. I think all week it was one newcomer after another kind of making you feel a little bit better about the Cubs offseason. Very early, absolutely. Nobody's going to overreact. Or maybe we did overreact this week, I don't know, in the mornings on the Mullen Haw show. But we talked about how Joc Pederson homers. Wow, that looks pretty good. And you can envision him being the guy that plays every day, not just against right-handers. And then you see Zach Davies come up with a pretty good debut. And then you see Trevor Williams do what he did against the Dodgers. Those three newcomers had, as you know, in terms of their first appearance as Cubs this week that we saw, have to feel pretty good about their arrival and what they could potentially mean to this team.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Pederson is somebody that they're counting on for a lot because it's being kind of set up, David, as the more mobile, better defensive player, faster runner than Kyle Schwarber going into this year. You know, he's a bit of an unknown here because he played on the West Coast. He's had a good career. You know, he's a home run hitter, a pretty good outfielder, played center field at the beginning of his career. So I think people are going to, you know, Cub fans are going to take a little while to warm up to him. But he should be a guy that David Ross can bat 1 through 6 in that lineup and feel pretty good about because his contact level has improved over the last couple of years, albeit against mostly right-handed pitching. And this year, he is being promised more playing time against left-handed pitching to start out to see if he can do well there. He's been limited to even being able to go against left-handed pitching because of the amount of platooning they do with the Dodgers. It wasn't that they felt he was totally inept. They just felt they had a better option on the days when there was a left-hander on the mound.
And Bruce, when you look at the Cubs this weekend, a lot more first coming. Jake Arrieta will be making his first appearance tomorrow, it appears, scheduled to go against the Diamondbacks. So I think a lot of Cubs fans looking forward to seeing him back in action with that familiar number 49 jersey. Won't be the same guy maybe that was here the last time, but how gradual will his process be of kind of ramping up to the season, and what do you expect out of his early spring appearances?
Yeah, I think they're going at a pace that's comfortable for him and the coaching staff, you know, because they have such an awareness of each other, you know, going back with Ross and the pitching people. Hadavi was certainly there at the time, and he's got two coaches that he had in Philadelphia with him on the coaching staff of the Cubs as well. So there's a great comfort and trust level there. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be built up for whether it's April 2nd when the Cubs, or probably April 3rd when the Cubs play their second game of the year, weather permitting. And I believe that he's going to be penciled in as a number two starter, unless he has some kind of setback here in spring training where it doesn't allow him to be ready to throw 5 or 6 that first start. I think it's David Ross is going to break it up with Hendricks, Arrieta, and follow that with Davies. I think that'll be his 1-2-3, just for different look purposes, David.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the valley, Bruce, over in Glendale, the White Sox had a week kind of dominated by pitching talk as well. We saw Lance Lynn, the workhorse. He pitched 2 innings. He wanted to pitch 3, and he looked like the guy that they got that they thought they were getting. And all the other conversations surrounded the young pitchers, Michael Kopech. We saw Jonathan Stever yesterday. Bruce, this White Sox staff is loaded. Steve Stone yesterday told us on the Mullin Haw Show, we'll hear from some of him interview later, called it the best bullpen in baseball. And I think it potentially could be the best bullpen in baseball. The starting rotation looks intact. A lot of excitement about the young White Sox pitchers complementing the veterans on that loaded staff.
Yeah, I think Steve is right. Potentially they have so many different power arms and different looks that they give you, with a Bummer and Hendricks at the end. I think it does potentially have a chance to be the best in baseball. But nonetheless, the proof will be in the pudding and when they take the field on April 1st. But there's a lot to be excited about there, White Sox-wise, with their bullpen. There's no question about it. And as you said, there's plenty of depth as far as the rotation goes with Lampert and Stever, you know, backing up, you know, the guys that are potentially fighting for the 4 and 5 spots in Rodon and Lopez and Cease. So a lot of praise yesterday on Dylan Cease from Tony La Russa and from Jonathan Lucroy, who caught him yesterday in a side session and was very, very impressed with not only the stuff, but, you know, just the potential to be a dominant pitcher in the American League. And I think we've all seen that over the last couple of years with the stuff. The command is a different issue that he's going to have to overcome and start finding the strike zone a little bit more often to his liking.
That's the thing, Bruce. I mean, you hear from the Sox catchers, Grandal and LaCroix, and they talk about Dylan Cease like a guy that can be among the best young pitchers in the American League. And then you talk, we talked to Chris Getz on the Moline Haw Show, and he talked about breakout guys being, you know, Lambert and Stever. And we heard from Michael Kopech, and we know what Tony La Russa thinks of Garrett Crochet. All this youth that is on the rise with the White Sox, and then you don't forget, but they've got Keuchel, they've got Giolito, they've got Lance Lynn at the top of that rotation. Boy, if everything comes together, you know, as Stoney said, you know, you get to the sixth inning against the White Sox with that bullpen, you feel like it's in lockdown mode. There is a lot of reason for excitement before you even get to the offensive kind of conversation and what the White Sox hitters bring. The White Sox pitchers, they could be lights out. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. And when you see a veteran catcher like LaCroix go on about Cease, this is a guy that's been around for 12 years. This is a guy that's caught great pitchers, Cy Young Award winners. So when you hear him, you know, elaborate more than, you know, just being asked once about him moving on, he was, you know, certainly pushing the fact that this is a guy they feel can be one of the dominant pitchers in the league, and we know stuff-wise it's there.
How surprised were you that this early in camp, and maybe this is the way to go, to define these roles, to remove the doubt, but Tony La Russa said, Garrett Crochet, Michael Kopech, you're going to start in the bullpen. Even though Kopech, some people project as a top-of-the-rotation starter in this organization for the duration of his career or the bulk of his career, were you surprised they did that this early, and is that a good idea in your mind?
Yeah, I think it is, David. This is, you know, with Kopech and Crochet, there were no, you know, Crochet didn't have any opportunities to throw until late in the year with the team, and he was just out of college. He was drafted last year, which is you know, amazing to think about. And with Kopech, you know, he hasn't pitched for 2 years, so you have to ramp up the arm. You just can't go from zero to 150 innings. The best way to ramp up the arm for Kopech is to start in the bullpen and not just, you know, maybe throw, you know, 20, 25 pitches, but maybe 40 pitches in two innings. You know, maybe these guys are the next generation early setup men, guys that come in the sixth inning and pitch two innings to get to your setup man and closer. When you have the luxury of power arms like the White Sox have, this is maybe how they bring Crochet and Kopech along this year. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how this all materializes.
We may get a chance to hear from him later, but Michael Kopech is a young man whose maturity receives a lot of attention. His that process, he kind of lives in a fishbowl. He's always been scrutinized. He's always been somewhat of a baseball celebrity. And I think that it was good for me to, I think for a lot of White Sox fans, to hear him talk this week, Bruce, and show the growth that I think everybody wants to see, the Sox hope to see. And it has been a while since we have seen him pitch, and it had been a while since we had heard him speak. And I think that when he did that this week, kind of provided a sense of relief and some order and excitement again because of his enormous potential on the mound. It's good to hear him taking care of things off of it.
Well, David, let's be honest. You know, there was a lot of second guessing about maturity level here for the guy and feeling good enough to play. Last year, he opted out because of COVID, but also other personal reasons. I had a baby being born as well. So from all of that, you know, we know we're looking at a kind of a celebrity first, baseball player second. You know, with a wife and girlfriend that were, you know, was in the you know, the movies and you know, pretty much a celebrity out in California. So this is you know, he talked yesterday about, you know, that he's a baseball player first and foremost, and that the celebrity stuff is not a concern. All he's concerned with is helping the White Sox and becoming the baseball player that he envisions himself to become. So with that being known, you have to like the idea that this is a power arm that has nothing but business on his mind going forward.
And speaking of power arms, you know, with Liam Hendricks in the back end of that bullpen, we heard from him this week. We're going to see more of him. It's a different approach with closers, isn't it, Bruce, in terms of the ramp-up process and how you have to be a little more careful here with guys whose role is a little bit more specialized?
Yeah, I think so. It really is. And, you know, again, he envisions himself a starting pitcher. Crochet envisions himself a starting pitcher. But they have a great trust in the pitching people there. They have a great trust in the idea that they will be brought along in the right way. And they're also anxious to be major league players, you know, on a team that has a chance to maybe do something special in 2021. So it's not like, you know, well, I'll just go get my work in and I'll make my way to the team. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that he is going to be, both of those guys are going to be essentially a big part of the early part of the season. As to whether they're eventually shipped out and stretched out to be starters, we're going to have to watch it. That'll be a part of this as well.
All right, Bruce, we've got a loaded show coming up. We are still going to talk to Willie Harris, the Cubs third base coach. We are planning to talk to Evan Marshall, the relief pitcher for the Chicago White Sox. I want to get into it with you a little bit, and I don't mean that in a combative way, but I think that we have a difference of opinion looking at this flip the inning, flip the spring training games, that approach that is getting a lot of conversation, let's say, out in spring training. Down the road, we'll talk about that. There's a lot to get to here on Inside the Clubhouse. 312-644-6767. Your calls, your texts, your opinions, ours will be coming at you as well until 11 o'clock today. For Bruce Levine, I'm David Hall. Come back, join us when we will have plenty of baseball talk on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
That's just fun. Wow, Nico Horner continues red hot, and that is gone. He was hitting 833, 5-for-6 coming in. Another rocket. This one leaves the park in left center. The Cubs on top 2-0. Stay hot, Nico.
Nico Suave, my goodness.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, here until 11 o'clock with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw. That was the voice of Jim DeShays and Boog Shambi on the Marquee Sports Network, calling another hot at bat from Nico Horner. And he is the guy who is as hot as it can be
for how
in
long?
Cubs camp. Right. And he's going to be creating a lot of traffic on the base paths. And that is good news for the third base coach, Willie Harris. And Bruce, we do have a special guest here joining us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apford.com.
We are happy to have the second most famous baseball player ever from Cairo, Georgia, joining us on the line from Cubs camp, the new third base coach of the Chicago Cubs, Willie Harris, an old friend, and great to be able to talk to you again. Willie, how are you today?
Morning, Willie.
I'm doing good, Bruce. How you doing, brother?
Oh, well, I'm doing great, man. It's been too long. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, and I'm excited that you have this opportunity with the Cubs. First and foremost, tell us about how the process went, the interview process came about to come in with the Cubs after working with the Giants recently.
Well, what happened was, you know, I was with the Cincinnati Reds last year. I was the outfield base running coordinator in that organization. And this offseason, Rossi gave me a call and asked me would I be interested in the job, you know, just go through the interviewing process. And I was ecstatic and excited. And, you know, it was me and a couple more guys. And fortunately for myself, I was chosen to be the third base coach for the Chicago Cubs. That's how it all happened.
So, Willie, you know how important baseball is in Chicago. You've got a World Series ring that kind of conjures up memories of that 2005 White Sox team and that special season. What do you look forward to as much as anything going back into the city and spending a season in a place that is crazy about the sport?
I'm just looking forward to getting there, man, and just being a part of the atmosphere on the north side. I've been a part of the atmosphere on the south side. And just looking forward to going out there and being on the baseball field. Hopefully we can get some fans in the stands to make it a lot more fun for the players. But just fortunate and just happy to have the opportunity. Looking forward to stopping at one of my favorite restaurants, Rana Japan and Portillo's and Mike Ditka's restaurant. If I can hit those three spots, I'll be good.
You're going to get two or three. I know that for sure, at least. I'll tell you what, Willie, you know, very few people will ever forget the fact that you scored the winning run in Game 4 of the World Series for the White Sox. But moving forward with your new Cub opportunity, you're also the outfield coach for the Cubs, and you have the opportunity to work with a Gold Glover in Jason Hayward, and then guys like Happ, who's been coming along in center, and now Peterson in left. Is there a Willie Harris philosophy of playing the outfield that you pass on to any of these guys?
It is. It is a philosophy that Willie Harris has been passing along to these guys, and it's respect the jump. That first step quickness, you know, like you said, you got a Gold Glove caliber guy in Hayward who already knows what's going on, and he respects the jump, not even knowing he's respecting the jump. So guys like, you know, Jock and Happ who might have a little less experience as Hayward, you know, if we can instill in those guys to just really focus on that first step and respect the jump, it'll make a lot of plays just that much easier for you to handle. So that's really been the philosophy here. These guys are pros, man. Hayward's the leader of the outfield. He's the captain here of the outfield. So it's been really great here in spring training. These guys have really been working hard, and they're looking really good so far.
Joined by Willie Harris, the Cubs third base coach here on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine. And Willie, how would you describe your approach as a third base coach in terms of everybody always wants to know, how aggressive will you be? And are you a guy whose name will be mentioned a lot during broadcasts or a little? And which one would you prefer?
Well, it's knowing situations before they happen. I like to be the guy who's more on the aggressive side, but I can't be, you know, I have to think about the situation. I can't be sending guys home when I have, you know, Rizzo at second base, especially here in spring training. You don't want to be sending these guys bang, bang plays at the plate, possibly causing injuries. But during the season, you know, I've talked to these guys about the base running, the secondary leads, how important they are, and how important that secondary lead is for me to make a decision on sending you or stopping you. But I do want to be labeled as that aggressive guy that forces the defense to come in and make plays, especially those guys in the outfield. They can't lay back and wait for a ball. They have to come. And if we can exert pressure on the opposing team constantly, you know, we can take advantage of their laziness and their poor play if they're playing that way. So I want to be labeled as aggressive, and I would love for the announcers to be saying my name a lot.
Willie Harris joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. One of the more interesting and personable guys that I've ever met in the game, and truly enjoyed a lot of time with Willie when he was with the White Sox. As far as going with metrics or scouting reports and gut for an outfielder, where does that flexibility lie for your guys? I know, you know, Rossi will be in charge of it, but it's going to be communication between you and him as to how these guys play and how much flexibility they have in the setup from pitch to pitch and player to player.
I mean, we do have a system in place where we have guys positioned to play in certain spots. But, I mean, you know, you have guys like Hayward, who's a Gold Glove guy, and Jock, who's got plenty of experience, and Happ, who's coming along. You do want to empower those guys to kind of use their gut and use their feel on what they're seeing during the game. Not only that, but You know, we have pitchers who some guys throw 90, and we have some guys who throw 96. So our defensive positioning will change in those particular situations. But I just want those guys to go out and play and just be themselves and not be robots out there, if that makes any sense.
Willie, you don't think of the Cubs as a speed team necessarily. I think Anthony Rizzo during the ESPN telecast earlier this week thought that Ian Miller might be the fastest player on the team. Would you agree, or who are among the fastest guys, and could any of them beat you in your prime?
Or now?
Oh, man. I'd say Ian Miller is probably the fastest guy here. But Nico has really been looking really good on the bases. He can run really well, so we're trying to get him to a spot where his confidence is through the roof with stealing bases and reading balls in the dirt and things of that nature. But back when I was younger, no, neither one of those guys could run with me, no.
And remember, you're only going to be 42, so you could probably still run a little bit. Hey, Willie, in closing with you, and David and I are really happy you picked up the phone and gave us a call today, and you're going to be around all year long. Center field, there's guys that can take a look at a ball, hit off of a bat, and run to the spot where it's at, and then there aren't. Is that just an instinct, or can that be learned? Can you learn to see the ball off the bat and instantly run to the spot where you know it's going to go?
I think, Bruce, you can get better at it. But, I mean, I play with guys like Andrew Jones and Carlos Beltran, and I think it's a gift, man. Those guys, that ball's hit off the bat, they can just drop their head and run to the spot, as opposed to a lot of other outfielders who have to continue to look at the ball. And I was one of those guys. I had to keep my eye on the ball. But, you know, I think you can get better at it with the first step quickness and kind of know where the ball's going to be. But some guys are more comfortable with just, you know, taking their eyes off the ball and running to the spot. And some guys are comfortable keeping their eyes on the ball the entire time while they're running to the spot. So as long as we're making the plays and catching the baseball, that's really all that matters for me. We just need to make the plays and do what we're supposed to do out there, and we're going to be just fine.
Enjoy being back in Chicago, Willie. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, my man. Guys, for having me. You guys have a great weekend.
You too.
Willie
Thanks
Harris,
again.
Cubs third base coach, former White Sox World Series champion from the 2005 team. Nice enough to join us. He's got a busy day out there in Arizona, Bruce, but it was nice to catch up with Willie Harris.
Yeah, we caught him before the time zone changed for us. It's going to be 2 hours behind us in Arizona starting on tomorrow night, or tonight.
And
rather.
Evan Marshall also is a guy who's willing to get up and talk baseball with us here on Inside the Clubhouse, and we will talk to him when we come back here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hendricks is going to be at the end. You're going to have those bridge guys. Aaron Bummer is one of those guys. And please don't forget Garrett Crochet, because the man's unhittable. I mean, he has electric stuff that he's going to use this year and just baffle hitters. Imagine if you're an opposing hitter thinking about getting into a bullpen, maybe the sixth, the seventh inning, whatever, sometimes the eighth, and you're going to see Kopech and Crochet coming out as a lefty-righty fireball duo. It's not going to be real comfortable. Then you add in Aaron Bummer, who's got as good a stuff as you'll ever find. You take Marshall, you take Foster, you take each and every one of those guys that will come into the ballgame. Each one throws harder than the next. Each one has stuff that only people aspire to. Most people will never get there.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score until 11 o'clock with Bruce Levine. I am David Haw. And that was the voice of Steve Stone, who talked to us yesterday on the Mullen Haw Show, talking about the White Sox powerhouse bullpen and just their great pitching staff. Steve Stone's called it the best bullpen in baseball. And once you get to the sixth inning, if the Sox have a lead, forget about it. It's going to be over, Bruce. And I think that is where we go to bring in our next guest here on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apford.com.
I think we should have walk-up music for this guy. He's on so often. He's a regular. I think if you take a vacation, Evan Marshall will be ready to step in for you. He's so good at this. He joins us now from Glendale, Arizona. Good morning, Evan. How are you today?
Good morning, Evan.
I'm doing wonderful, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's always fun having you on, especially because you always keep me in line, which is something people have a hard time doing. What? How is camp so far for you, and where are you as far as getting your work in and ready to go for the opening day, April 1st?
Everything with me is great. I've got the one outing under my belt, and honestly, the one outing was just about as good as I can do it. So I already have the stuff, and now I just got to fine-tune it a little bit. But I'm in a good place, and things are going real good here as a team.
Evan, throughout the offseason, I think fans looked at what the White Sox were doing, and with every move got a little bit more excited. You get Liam Hendricks to, you know, come in and be a guy who he's been the best closer in baseball, the most consistent last couple of years, and you start to see things and you start to get excited. How hard is it from your standpoint to temper those expectations, or do you want to embrace everything? And you know, is there a balance there that you have to strike between being so excited about what's going to happen and yet letting it happen?
There's definitely a balance for sure. But at the same time, like we kind of want to puff our chests out and let the league know, you know, we're serious. You know, the off season, all the moves that we've made, you know, it really does start to build expectations. And in our clubhouse, we know that. We know that there's a lot expected of us and the places that we can go. That can be tough on some guys, but honestly, in this room, in our clubhouse, it seems like everybody's ready to rise up to the challenge. Everybody's really looking forward to getting this thing started.
So a couple of years ago, when Tim Anderson started to assert himself and his personality to other teams in the league, there were some uneasy moments and some, you know, there were some fights and there were some taking exception to the norm in the game, and looking back on it, it appears, Evan, that the White Sox were just establishing their personality and Tim being a part of that, and basically saying, "Hey, we're here. Don't look by us, and you know, we're here to win." How do you look back at that time, and also how that has progressed to the White Sox establishing their own type of persona?
I think the two go hand in hand. You kind of got a period of time where Timmy was sort of breaking out of his shell a little bit, and the rest of us kind of followed. The White Sox started to play some better baseball, and we made it fun out there, and it's starting to get free and easy, and everybody can kind of just be themselves, and all that matters is getting the win. So we sort of followed in Timmy's footsteps there as a team. And you've got guys that are always going to be reserved and quiet, like Jose Abreu, the MVP of the league, who could be the loudest player out there. But he's our leader, and we adore him. And you know, if he's not going to be loud and I don't know, colorful out there, there's plenty of other guys on this team that will fill that role for sure.
Evan, so Tony La Russa comes back. He hasn't managed in a decade, and I think a lot of people are curious to see how his approach, if it has changed at all, has changed. And he is a guy that in the past has always been, you know, when you look at the bullpen, guys have had specific roles. Maybe there's been a lot of structure in who does what when. I don't know if that can be the same approach with as many good arms as you have in the White Sox bullpen. I'm not sure what the approach will be. Do you know anymore? Have you had? Do you worry about these kinds of things? And if you do, what would be your specific role that would be ideal for you?
I don't think worrying about it is the right frame of mind for that. We have sort of a spoil. We sort of have like. I don't know. It's the best group of bullpen arms I've ever been around. So, you know, as far as having a concrete role and everybody having their assigned place, honestly, I think what's going to happen is that a couple of guys are going to throw today, and then a couple of guys will throw tomorrow, and then the day after that, those guys that do the first time will throw again. It's going to keep us all fresh because we have so many guys that are capable of coming in and doing pretty similar to the same thing. We, you know, putting up zeros, there's a lot of quality arms down there. So we know where Hendricks is going to be. And I would assume me and Bummer will be right in front of him. And then, man, you got Crochet's looked amazing. You know, we know we're getting maybe Kopech down there and he's a flamethrower, but, then you bring back guys like Cody Hoyer and Matt Foster that had incredible seasons last year. So, you know, we know that there's more than one way to get a zero And because we have so many quality arms, we can sort of work in shifts.
Watching veteran pitchers like you is fun for me, Evan, because you pitch to the four quadrants that are out there, and you try to make a pitch appear to be a strike that is just borderline as to whether it is or isn't. How long does it take somebody like yourself to refine that type of pitching technique? And when does it happen to a power arm like yourself and guys like eventually Kopech and Crochet that they are not just trying to throw a ball a million miles an hour down the middle and strike somebody out, but make a hitter go for something that he's either going to miss hit or miss?
Yeah, I'm definitely a pitcher, not a thrower. I'm 2% better than the major league average or something on velocity, so that's not where I'm going to win my battles. But I kind of serve as a role model that there's more than one way to get a guy out. And you mentioned, Crochet and Kopech. Those guys have incredible talent. But they can watch the way that I go about doing it and then watch the way that they go about doing it. And, yeah, we might both put up a zero, but it's going to happen in very different ways. We talk about this kind of stuff all the time and how to refine the stuff where you're not so much just throwing. I throw a lot of balls. That's what makes me good, is everything I throw is a strike out of my hand, and then it's not. And the hitter's already committed to swinging, and I get soft contact, versus they can kind of just close their eyes and chuck it 101 down the middle, and that's pretty hard to hit too. So they don't need to pitch like me yet, but that day might come eventually. We'll see.
Joined by Evan Marshall here on Inside the Clubhouse, the fine 31-year-old White Sox relief pitcher entering his third season on the South Side. And Evan, I got a kick out of reading about and just remembering that when you talked about how you made that evolution from maybe thrower to pitcher and how you just educated yourself, you were pitching with Miguel Montero, the former Cubs catcher, the former Diamondbacks catcher. And you found out how much to value the changeup because he thought it was pretty good and you started throwing it more. And now that started maybe gradually going in a direction toward where you are now, where your changeup, your curve, your sinker, those are the pitches that maybe you're more reliant upon than, you just throw it past somebody. How hard is that for a pitcher to get to that point mentally so he's more of a thinker than a thrower?
It takes a long time. I mean, eventually you have to get crushed doing it your way a few times before you realize maybe I need to be adaptable to other things. And so for me, my secret to success is kind of that perfect mix where I'm throwing, 33% fastballs, changeups, and curveballs, and I can throw them all for a strike at any time, and the hitters, I don't get into patterns, and the hitters don't know what's coming, and That's what makes me good. And so for a younger guy who's made it through their entire career just throwing flames, developing the off-speed pitches and then, most importantly, the command of the off-speed pitches where you can throw it at any time, that takes a long time. But I'm not saying that the guys on this team can't do it because they are so much more talented than I am, but it just takes a little bit of time.
Well, you have been the world champion of having the quirkiest personality in the bullpen for a while with the White Sox, okay? And that's a good thing. That's a real good thing, especially when you're a relief pitcher. But are you being challenged this year by Liam Hendricks? And what have some of the Liam Hendricks moments been like for you so far?
Yeah, I no longer have that title as the quirkiest. He is a big, beautiful personality, and we are so lucky to have him. He's one of the most talented guys I've ever been around. So, personality-wise, he's fun, he's loud, he's creative. We have a very good time with him. But, talent-wise, is the strongest arm I've ever played catch with. So, I'm pretty excited to see what he's going to do with the ball late in the game. And good or bad, he's a beauty. I mean, we're really looking forward to having him.
How would you describe the transition from Doc Cooper, one of the best pitching coaches any team's ever employed? And it's kind of old school, though. He's crusty. He is Coop. He embraced everything that came with that description to 37-year-old Ethan Katz, kind of more of a representative of the new wave of pitching coaches. And I would imagine there's a change in style. And certainly I wonder if how the changes the approach.
Yeah, I mean, Coop was great. We miss Coop for sure. But, you know, completely different styles. Coop taught a lot of these kids how to be big leaguers and how to pitch in the big leagues. And then you take what they learned from him, and then you bring in 37-year-old Ethan Katz, who is sort of a guru with the new wave of pitching and the new mindsets. And I think it's going to take everybody's game to sort of a new level. I mean, you know, Bummer and me, Hendricks, there's not a whole lot for us to change. We already kind of have it dialed in, but with the youth we have on this team, he's definitely going to help some guys find the best version of themselves.
When you have had any, first of all, have you had any chats with Tony La Russa, and what have you learned about his style of managing and, more importantly, communicating with players so far?
Tony's been great. You know, the off season there was a lot of uncertainty about how this was going to feel, how this was going to go. But in all honesty, it has been great. This has been a great camp. We are a very good team, and Tony knows that. And he kind of just says, you know, the good teams aren't the ones that need, you know, all the hands-on coaching. You guys can take care of most of the stuff yourself. But then he's there for us for the little things, and that's kind of what makes Tony Tony. He can put the X's and O's together in a way that is going to put us in a position to be competitive. And I think that's all anybody's looking for from him.
You know, Evan, I think we get back to the approach for a second. Yeah, when it's a starting rotation, sometimes, for instance, when we talk about the Cubs, we talk about the fact that they have similar guys and styles in terms of the approach, and who, guys whose velocities may not be where, you know, in that high 90s or mid 90s, but they are effective pitchers. When you're in the Sox bullpen and you have all those flamethrowers, the way you referred to some guys like Kopech and some of the other Crochet and other guys like that who really can just throw it and the velocity be high velocity guys, does it at all complement you? Does it make your stuff harder to read and because of the way maybe you're not that guy? And does it complement your style at all? Does it matter as much when you're talking about a bullpen as much as when we refer to it in a starting rotation context?
You know, I think about that sometimes. Like I like pitching after Giolito because he's four seamers over the top, and I'm sink from the side a little bit. But in all honesty, I don't think it makes too big of a difference. I think every hitter sort of hits the reset button every time they get a new at bat against a new pitcher. So, you know, I actually was talking to Madrigal this morning about like what's the difference. You know, yesterday there were two days ago there were live BPs, and it was Hendricks and that Bummer. And you know what's you get 96 over the top or you get 96 from the side with all the action, you know, what's that like, which one's harder? And he said it's not so much like harder to face one after the other. Those are two really good arms, but you have different approaches and the hitters are so good now, they just sort of hit the reset button and it doesn't matter what happened previously. But I've certainly put a little bit of stock into that, you know, coming into the game after like an overhand starting pitcher, maybe that does help me a little bit. But as far as dealing with, you know, the difference in velocity, I mean, yeah, you got Kopech and Crochet and Hendricks and Bummer and Hoyer, and these guys can all go triple digits. And there's me, and I reach back for 95, and I'm very proud of that. But that is certainly me trying to throw harder doesn't make me better. This, you know, being 30 and having been around a little while, I know what the best version of me looks like, and usually it doesn't involve me just throwing as hard as I can every pitch. So while every now and then a little extra velocity helps, I know that that's just one little piece as far as what makes me good.
Evan, okay, Evan, we're going to have a walk-up. We'll have walk-up music for you next time. Who do you want when you join the show?
Oh, man, who do I want? How about the Notorious B.I.G.?
Okay,
we'll start the show off that way.
That's a good call. And before we let you go, Evan, you mentioned Nick Madrigal. Do you have your Nick Madrigal Mr. 3000 t-shirt on right now?
I do. I don't want to like it's a cute t-shirt. It's fun, and we, you know, we adore that kid. So, yeah, we're having a good time here. I'm sure there's more T-shirts and pranks to be had in the future. So.
Thanks so much for your time. Look forward to talking to you again down
there
the road,
go.
Evan Marshall. Have a good day.
All right, thanks, guys.
Arizona. All right.
All right, appreciate it.
Evan Marshall, White Sox relief pitcher, joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce, we come back. Plenty of baseball conversation. Your call, 312-644-6767, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.